Hello, I'm Buzz and I'm an alcoholic. It's a pleasure to be here. I said before, I have this kind of, disclaimer that I'm no expert on this. This is just my experience at practicing the principles, which are the 12 steps. And tonight, talking about step 11. And earlier today, my bride told me that this is her favorite step, so the pressure's on, you know. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will and power to carry that out. My second sponsor said that in step 3, we made a decision to turn our will and our life over the care of God. But that was just a decision. We had to do some things first. And what that was the rest of the steps. In step 11, that's where we turn it over. This is where we turn our will and our life. I shouldn't say this is where we do. This is where I turn my will and my life over the care of God. And I kind of do it on maybe not a daily basis, but one of the things, I have never once got on my knees and said, God, you're doing a lousy job. I want to take back. I'm taking over for here. You're out. But see, I have an ego and a resurgence of my ego, and that's what happens. So I take it back sometimes. He also said prayer is when you talk to God, and meditation is when you listen. And that helped me a lot in the beginning. I looked up the definition of prayer in a dictionary, and there's a lot of definitions of it. The one I liked was a devout petition to God. Okay. And the 12 steps and 12 to-dos since page 104, and also as Bill sees at page 127, Bill Wilson wrote, in AA, we have found the actual good results of prayer are beyond question. They are matters of knowledge and experience. All those who have persisted found strength not ordinarily their own. They have found wisdom beyond their usual capability. And they have increasingly found peace of mind, which can stand firm in the face of difficult circumstances. When I was talking about step 1, 2, and even step 3, I said I didn't believe in God. And by the time I got to step 12, I believed in God with all my heart. Maybe not God as you believe, but it's God as I believe. And the thing is, God as I understand Him changes, it evolves. It's different than it was when I stood before you last week, and it'll be different next week. My understanding of God changes sometimes from day to day. We're talking about prayer now. I've said a lot of different types of prayers. I used to pray mostly for tangible things and to get out of jams. Tangible things. I used to pray to hit the lottery, new car, house, girlfriend, things like that. And then there was the old foxhole prayer, you know, God, get me out of this, I won't do it again. And I'd get out of it, and I'd do it again. I've said many foxhole prayers. I've often prayed for people or for God to help people. I've often prayed for God's help. I've often prayed for God's help with my will, you know. From a retreat several years ago, there was a gentleman that said, he suggested that we pray for people that resent us. And I adopted that. I I'm sure there's people out there that resent me that I don't even know about. And I pray for these folks. In the Bible, in Mark chapter 11, verse 14, it says, "Don't worry about anything. Instead, pray about everything. Tell God what you need and thank Him for what He has done." Nowadays, I often say prayers of gratitude for things I've already received. And, you know, I think when I pray for things, you know, the gratitude for things I already received, it reminds me, those prayers remind me to be grateful. Because, you know, just recently I ran into a guy that was 2 years sober when I came in. And he did wonderful. I looked up to him. And he went out, and he was out for 26 years, and he recently came back in. And the guy's a mess. Like, and I'm so grateful that, and the thing is, I'm surprised he's alive, but by the grace of God, there I go I. Like I said, I looked up to him, and man, he's a mess. You know, I'm going to, I guess it always takes me about 10 minutes to calm down. I'm nervous. We have many prayers in the books we read, both AA books and some of the spiritual books we read. There's a lot of prayers. You know, the only thing tangible I've ever seen that we pray for in AA is "Give us this day our daily bread." And I think when that prayer was given to us a couple thousand years ago, back then, if you ate that day, it was a good day, you know. And you can see I don't have that problem anymore. I haven't missed a meal in a while, you know. I guess most of the time when I pray, it centers me around my relationship with God. Whatever prayer I say, I turn it over to God's help and guidance. And you know, like I said, I didn't believe in God when I came in. And when I started to pray, it was because it works. It works for me, and I don't know if it works for everybody, but I've witnessed it working in other people's lives too. You know, I'll give you an example. I was sober actually quite a while. And I was attempting to stop smoking, and I was very, very addicted to nicotine. That was the one drug that I says, "I'll do this till I drop." And then it started getting painful, and I tried to give it up many, many times. And I was attempting to stop smoking for about the 700th time, you know. And smoking cigarettes, that's what I'm talking about. There's a lot of other things you can smoke nowadays, but I'd failed all of them. I was coming to an AA meeting in Fairview, and I was coming up 98, and I noticed a big white sign, a billboard, and in the middle of it, it said just what I said. It says, it's a white billboard, and it had three letters in black, or three words in black. It just said, "Pray, it works." And right then, I'm driving down the road, and I said, "God, please help me quit smoking." And you know, I intuitively felt like somebody heard me. And you know, I kind of felt like it would work. And I prayed, and the thing is, it was hard for me to quit smoking, and many times I had the urge, and many times I wanted to throw it in and get a pack of cigarettes, and each time I would pray. And damn, it worked. It's been 30 years or better since I've smoked a cigarette, and that's what got me to really take this serious. And when I came in, it says praying only for knowledge of His will. That was just words. I thought, I didn't think it was bullshit, but I didn't think it was for me. You know, I just didn't think it would work for me. I strongly believe, you know, there's different kinds of prayers, and people say there's good prayers and bad prayers and foxhole prayers and so forth. I strongly believe that there isn't any prayer that's a waste of time, because it's an attempt to contact God, for me to contact God. God knows what I'm doing. I think he knows, and he doesn't have to contact me. You know, he does. But for me, that's the thing. It's an attempt to make a connection with my higher power. If I was going to give you any advice tonight, I would say do whatever works for you. I have a God box. And in this God box, I write a concern on a piece of paper, put it in an envelope, and I date it 30 days ahead of time. If I did it today, the date I'd put on the outside of the envelope would be February 10th. And I put it in a God box, and then I open it up in 30 days, the envelope. And many times, that concern is removed. You know, it's gone. I have laughed. One time, I was tearing some sheetrock out and putting it back in, and I heard this meowing in the wall. And I thought, oh man, Marilyn's cat's in the wall. I'm dead, man, you know? And I couldn't get it out. I had to go to work. And so, I think I put on the paper, Marilyn's effing cat's in the wall, and dated it 30 days. And then I went to work, and I'm rehearsing what I'm going to tell her, you know, and when I get home, and all these excuses, and I couldn't wait that long, and I was working a second trick, and she was home, and I called her up on my lunchtime, and I says, listen, Orf, that's what we call the cat. He needed a program, I'll tell you. But anyway, I says, honey, Orf's stuck in the wall. She says, no, he isn't. He's right here. He said, now, I don't know what happened, but it was like when I opened that up 30 days later, you know, it was, and that's happened so many times. And even if it doesn't happen, if it's not resolved, when I put something in the God box, it's in God's hands, not mine. And it's a ritual that kind of helps me. And, you know, get yourself a jar or a box or something and put your concern, because I consider that a prayer too. And another thing I do, we just came from a viewing last night, and there's folks, friends that die. You've all had people die. I usually put the obit in the God box. You know, I can't do anything for them anymore, so give it to God. And I think that's kind of a prayer. But like I said, do whatever works for you. I can't think of anything more on prayer that I could tell you or share with you that I do. It's kind of simple. Now, meditation might not be quite as simple. On the 12 and 12, on page 98, Bill Wilson said, there is a direct linkage among meditation and prayer. Taken separately, these practices can bring much relief and benefit. But when they are logically related and interwoven, the result is an unshakable foundation for life. I'm going to read that. Those last four words, an unshakable foundation for life. Now, I personally don't believe that you can get an unshakable foundation for life anywhere else. You know, and how it works, there's three pertinent ideas, and that B, the second pertinent idea, it says no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. I don't think any human power can give you an unshakable foundation for life. I personally do not believe that a job, money, property, or prestige, which we talk about a lot in AA, can provide even a poor substitute for an unshakable foundation for life. Had a guy that lived up the road, looked like he had it all. He was 63 years old, ready to retire. Would have had a retired very nicely, nice house, car, walked down by the river and ate his gun. Had it on the outside, but it wasn't on the inside. That internal locus of control it's on the inside. I know I've bought things to make me feel good before. Boy, the shine wears off them so fast, you know. Wilson wrote in a letter, meditation, and this was in 1946, meditation, as we have seen, is the means by which we bring new vision, action, and grace to bear upon the dark and negative side of our natures. I love that, and I'm going to explain that a little bit more in more detail in a minute. Now, here's a question that I've been to so many discussion meetings. It's a question I've asked, and I've heard other people ask this: how do we meditate? There's all kinds of ways of meditating. It depends on who you ask, really. I've tried things that other people do that don't work for me, such as sing. A lot of people find, you know, they I can't sing very well, you know. I mean, if I started singing now, I'd probably hurt your ears, you know. But anyway, some people chant, jog, yoga, tai chi, qigong. And there's many more. Some I've tried. Personally, I don't do a lot of them. So I'm no judge of how well they work. I've tried some things that worked for other people and they didn't work for me. They might have worked if I hung in with it, but I'm an alcoholic of the type I want. You know, a double shot of Southern Comfort gave me the results right now. You know, it gave me what I wanted. And I've never quite got over that. And when I do something, if it doesn't work for me, I don't do it very long. Personally, I love to go hiking. I hiked for 5,000 steps in the woods with a pack this morning. I love to go hunting, fishing, really anything in the outdoors. I often meditate when I'm writing, either in my daily journal or writing a new book. A sponsee once came to me, and I could tell there was something wrong, and he confessed. He says, "I know you won't approve of this, but my wife bought me a session with a New Age mystic." Now, I don't know why he thought I wouldn't approve of it, but I replied something like, "Try it. And if it works, keep doing it. And if it doesn't work, don't keep doing it, you know." I told him, basically, go ahead and experiment as long as it doesn't hurt anybody. I tell my kids, my wife, things like this a lot. You know, Maryland has a new recipe. Let's try this. And yeah, let's try it. If it's terrible, we won't do it no more. I guess what I'm trying to tell you is I don't know what's going to work for you. I wish I could answer that, how to meditate. But there again, I just said this earlier, and I've said it throughout these talks that I've given. Do what works for you. You know, if it works for you, who cares if it works for anybody else? Okay, I'm going to go back to the 12 steps and 12 traditions, page 105. And Wilson put, perhaps one of the greatest rewards of meditation. Whoa, that's a Freudian slip. Prayer and medication? Yeah, okay. yeah, okay. Perhaps one of the greatest rewards of meditation and prayer is a sense of belonging that comes to us. We no longer live in a completely hostile world. We are no longer lost and frightened and purposeless. The moment we catch even a glimpse of God's will, the moment we begin to see truth, justice, and love as real and eternal things in life, we are no longer deeply disturbed by the seeming evidence to the contrary that surrounds us in purely human affairs. Human affairs, turn on the news and you're going to see purely human affairs. And it leaves me kind of down, you know. I'm scared, you know. Our own Bruce sent me that meditation. He sends me a meditation almost every day. And underneath that is a thought to consider. They always write that underneath it. And the thought to consider that day was meditation is self-examination and self-searching. And I thought about that. I'm going to say that again. Meditation is self-examination and self-searching. And I thought about that, and it hung with me like it really meant something. So I came up with this, and having said that, I do my most and best meditation and self-examination or self-searching right here in these rooms, right here. I don't care if it's speaker meetings, discussion meetings, talks like this, workshops, big book studies, step meetings. It's, you know, I'm in a discussion meeting and I'm doing what I see some of you doing. I'll be people around the room. Maybe I've already given my comment and somebody across the room says something that almost contradicts it, and I'm shaking my head. Not because I'm wishy-washy. It's like, and not so much that I agree, but I see how that applies to me. And I'm doing self-searching and self-examination. And sometimes I have to look at things different. You know, I have to look. I can look at the dark side of things, and sometimes I have to see the bright side of things. I love what I was listening to Sandy Beach today, because Joe sent me one, and there's a Sandy Beach story. He was sober about 6 months, and I just love to listen to Sandy Beach. And he was sober about 6 months, and he told his sponsor, he says, "When does it get better?" And he was a fighter pilot in the Marines, career fighter pilot. And in those days, the Marines didn't have any alcoholics, so they put him in the nut ward. And his sponsor says, "Well, the Marines, they let you out of the nut ward." And he says, "Yeah." And he says, "They gave you your job back." He says, "Yeah." He says, "You've been sober 6 months, and you're making coffee, and the guys down at the meeting kind of like you." And Sandy says, "Well, yeah, if you look at it like that." And sometimes that's what AA does. It makes me look at things different. And that's meditation. And that's why sometimes I think that's where my higher power speaks to me, right here in these rooms. And the voice he uses is your voice. And I think that's what attracts me to AA, to be honest with you. Because I love these meetings. I don't like it so much when I got to talk, but you know. I don't know, I can't say that. I Thanks, Jill. I love her. Some of you are nodding your head right now. You're probably meditating, you know. Actually, there's a spiritual connection between us that started this. Bill Wilson went to see Dr. Bob. Bob was going to give him 15 minutes. Bob was hungover. He was going to give him 15 minutes. He called him Williams twice or about the first five. But actually, Wilson said, Dr. Bob said, "What are you going to do to help me?" And Bob said, "I didn't come here to help you. I came here to talk to you, hoping it would help me." And they got that spiritual connection right then. And that's what started this whole ball rolling. That's why we're here tonight. That was the spirit. That first meeting that was only going to last 15 minutes lasted 6 hours. And the only reason it ended after 6 hours is they were out of smokes. You know, they ran out of cigarettes. But anyway, another thing from the 12. You know, this is from the 12 and 12. I love the 12 and 12, which was written 12 years after. It's written by the same author as the big book. Bill Wilson, I mean, he had the help of, you know, they say 100 other people, but, oh man, that would just be a big argument, I would think. But anyway, he wrote the big book, and 12 years later, he wrote the 12 and 12. And I really love the 12 and 12, but I think part of the reason is because I think Wilson had 12 more years of recovery and discovery before he wrote the 12 and 12 after the big book. Anyway, he wrote this: "There is a direct linkage among self-examination, meditation, and prayer. Taken separately, these practices can bring much relief and benefit, but when they are logically related and interwoven, the result is an unshakable foundation for life." That's what I read before. "Now and then we may be granted a glimpse of that ultimate reality, which is God's kingdom, and we will be comforted and assured that our destiny in that realm will be secure for as long as we try, however falteringly, to find and do the will of our own Creator." You know, I don't know what God's will is for me. I don't even pretend to know. But I'll tell you this, when I think I'm doing God's will, I feel good. I feel good. It's like a better feeling than I've never got doing anything. And like I said, I don't know if it's God's will. Maybe someday I'll find out. I don't know. I want to switch gears now for a few minutes. I took a man through the 12 steps at his request. I wasn't his sponsor. His sponsor was a different fella. But I took him through the 12 steps and taught him what I knew about the 12 steps. And shortly after we finished the 12 steps, he wasn't feeling very well, and he was diagnosed with stage 4 lung cancer. And when he went to take the chemo, they discovered he also had Hep C, which kind of chemo really, they don't interact well. And he was dying. And I stayed in pretty close contact with him. And I went in, the last time I talked to him, it was a couple of days before hospice gave him 10 days, and he was kind of worrying about what he was going to do after the 10 days was up. I says, "Well, they're just going to come get their bed and throw you out. They'll do something." But I kind of knew then that they gave him 10 days, and I think their math was more than enough. But I went in, and he was in bad shape. And I've talked to a lot of people that were dying, and one of the things that I like to do that comforts them, I ask them what I can do for them afterwards. And I've done some things for a few people, and it kind of comforts them to leave. And I said, "What can I do for you?" And he says, "Pray." I says, "I've been praying." And I says, "What would you like me to pray for?" He says, "That I get better and get up out of this bed." Now, I don't know whether I should have said this or not, but I said, "You got stage 4 lung cancer and hep C. Hospice gave you 10 days, two of them are gone." I said, "Do you know what time it is?" He says, "Yeah." He says, "I'm going to die." And I said, "With that, having said that, what can I do for you?" And he says, "Tell my friends and family that I died sober." And I says, "You got it." And I did. Actually, two of us gave the eulogy. I gave a eulogy, and then his sponsor gave a eulogy. And I did. I told everybody he died dead sober, just eyes wide open, you know. Actually, he died only a matter of hours after that happened. But the man died. And the thing is, I think we're all going to die. I think I'm going to... I've never died before, but I kind of think it's coming, you know? I hope not tonight in the car on the way home, because Helen's going, "Yeah." Yeah, yeah. But, you know, if you think about it, if prayer kept people from dying, nobody'd die. They'd pray a lot. You know, I said, that man died. Yeah, I said I used to pray to hit the lottery. I never hit the lottery. And you know what? Sometimes when I pray, the answer is no. And that's my answer. You know, when I prayed to hit the lottery, I knew. God's smart, I think. And he's smart enough to know better than turn me loose on this world with $2 million in my pocket or $5 million. It would turn out bad. That would have epic fail written all over it, you know. I mean, you know, and what I'm trying to get at is when you pray, sometimes and a lot of times, the answer that I get is no. I knew I wasn't going to hit the lottery. I knew this guy wasn't going to get better and walk out of that bed. And, you know, and I just wrote this down, and I don't think I'm being sarcastic, but maybe it could be taken that way. What if we said, "God, grant me to accept no for an answer"? Because, you know, now, what I'm kind of leading up to is the wisdom in the 12 steps that Wilson wrote. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will and the power to carry that out. Only for knowledge of His will and the power to carry that out. Because the thing is, if I pray for something I want, like the lottery or somebody to live, and it doesn't happen, I have an ego that kind of competes with my spiritual well-being. My ego is going to say, "See, I told you, you prayed for him that he wouldn't die, and he died. Told you there was no God," and it's going to leave doubt. So, and part of my faith is that when I turn my will and my life over to the care of God, I didn't turn it over to God, I turned it over to the care of God in step 3. I have to have the faith that no matter what happens, God's still caring for me. I have a God today that I believe is just loves me, And I have a gut. I like what it says in the big book, that it's open to all inclusive, never exclusive, you know. And the thing is, I believe God loves me as much as he does you, and God loves you as much as he does me. And I have to leave, like my friends that die of cancer, I put them in my God box, and they're in God's hands, into the care of God. And I want to just restate something I said earlier. I said, I don't believe prayer, any prayer, is a waste of time. And I stand by that. And when the answer is no, does not mean God didn't answer my prayer, and it does not mean God doesn't love me. I'm a father, and you can ask my three kids. There's a lot of times I said no. But that's kind of my take on step 11. And in closing, I want to just say, do what works for you. You know, I hope you got something out of this you can take. And I'm done.
I just wanted to turn the pen on instead of the microphone. Do we have any key questions for him?
Yes.
I'm Wendy, alcoholic addict.
Wendy.
Step 11 was... I really tripped over that last part of step 11 where it says praying only for the knowledge of his will for us. That was fine. I wanted to know what his will was because I can pull that off. Whatever he wants me to do, I can do it. But then it said, and the power, only his power, you know, to do his will. And that's what tripped me up. It's like, I don't need his power. I have so much of my own.
Okay.
Actually, I didn't word it like that when I was struggling. I mean, I just couldn't understand how I... And I was wondering if you had feelings like that, kind of like, I don't know, just like having your own, trying to figure out, how do I let God do this when I can do it, kind of a thing.
Yeah. I can't exactly identify with you. You have to understand, when I came in, I didn't believe in God. My God's name was Miss Southern Comfort, you know. Alcohol was my God. And I'd been kind of abused by organized religion to where I didn't believe in God. So when I first read that, it sounded like wah, 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 you know. And when I started getting into it, that, yes, I liked the statement one time, from a Canadian. His sponsor told him, you need to know two things about God. Yes, there is a God. And number two, it ain't you. And I guess a lot of things seem impossible. And I've seen it happen. You know, the longest I ever stayed sober, I did it twice. I stayed sober for 17 days. Once the first 5 days was in detox, and the first 5 days was in jail. And that's how... So when I got into the 18th day, I was on new territory. And today I'm still on that new territory. And the thing is, I never thought I could ever stay sober very long at all. And that's not my power. I can't do this by myself. I tried to stay sober hundreds of times, maybe thousands by myself. I tried to quit smoking cigarettes. Cigarettes was, you know, it was a big thing for me. I really wanted to quit for years. And I couldn't. I wanted to quit smoking cigarettes and my addiction, but I couldn't. And that's not my... I didn't get that power. It's not my power. So I guess... I don't know if that answers your question, but I never thought I had very much power on my own. I mean, I knew I was an alcoholic long before I quit. I thought I was just going to die that way. I thought, you know. And when I first come to AA, these people that are saying they got 8 years or 12 years, I thought they didn't drink like I did, you know. But does that answer your question, Wendy, a little bit? Good. Yeah. If it was up to me, I'd have been dead pretty close to 35 years ago.
I'm Bill, an alcoholic and addict.
Hi, Bill.
And I had similar problems to you, and I'm very young in the program. I went through a month of treatment at Rock Creek in November, and I've been out since November 28th.
That's pretty good.
I'm excited, and what's helped me so much is actually just coming to the rooms. This isn't a meeting I usually attend, but I was here. This is one of the last meetings I attended before I went to Rock Creek, and it was the first, you were talking about the first step, so it's kind of funny to be here 11 weeks later. But I was troubled, as you were, about the power, you know. It was one thing to ask for, you know, to do the God's will, but then the power to carry it out. And I think it was only like tonight in hearing you speak that it clicked for me, because that clicked with me that you were saying, you know, there's a spiritual thing going on, and because every meeting I go to, there's an energy of some sort in there, you know, and it's different in different meetings. But for me tonight, I understood that, you know, the power to carry out God's will is, the way I think about it at this moment, is that power for me has to be the power of getting out of the way. The part of my being, to just get out of the way, or to surrender and just, you know, and just channel God in some way. And the only way I can do that is, you know, and it's hard to do, because if you're an alcoholic or an addict,
we want to control it.
We want to control it because that's how our life has been. And so it's, you know, there are all of these sort of contradictions in the AA language, but they all make sense because, you know, surrender to win. You know, there's a whole bunch of them. That's the only one that's coming to my mind right now. But it was in hearing you speak tonight that it clicked for me that, oh, that is a much more palatable. Okay, I'm a long ways from step 11, you know, clearly. I'm just getting started on 4. But, you know, you hear the 12 steps at every meeting, and, you know, you can't help but start, like, contemplating what they mean or what they're going to be like eventually. And that's one that's always been difficult. Like, how do I do that part? And now I think I have an idea.
One thing I would say, just, you told me a lot when you said I'm Bill and I'm an alcoholic. And one of the things that attracts me and most people to alcohol is we get the effect instantly. And spirituality isn't like that. I think it's more is revealed. And when they say spiritual awakening, for me, it was like that, a spiritual awakening. And I, too, am very controlling, and I want to control things. And all that does is it kind of throws me off, and I get out of the way and let God control it, and it kind of works. There's a thing that you'll hear some, it's not really a slogan, but it says more will be revealed. And you keep coming back, and all of a sudden one day it happens. I had a guy, he came in like I did. I used to tell people I was an atheist when I came in. I don't think I was. I was more afraid of God. But anyway, This guy came in the same way. He was abused by an organized religion, not the same religion I had, but same thing. And we could connect on the early days. And he says, one day he says, "Stop, do you believe in God right now?" And I says, "Yeah, with all my heart." He says, "How did that happen?" "I don't know. It just happened. I come to these meetings and I kept coming, and a lot of times I'd hear speakers or something say something, and inside in my head I'm thinking, bullshit. But you know, I haven't run into any." I used to read some in the big book. Okay, I'm running out of time here. And I used to think bullshit. And so far, I haven't found any bullshit in the big book, you know. And sometimes somebody will say, it contradicts itself, and I'd say, okay, show me where. And nobody's ever showed me where. Does that kind of answer your question, Bill? Keep coming back. God bless you. We're out of time.
Yeah, we've been out of time.
We have. I'm a minute over. I apologize.
7:30.